Thank you so much. When I got the message, I thought, is this person, is she serious? Does she know what she's asking? This is going to be a train wreck here. And then I thought to myself, I'm fearful. And I thought, this is how I want to start to share, is that if you've been around and been in a meeting with me long enough, you'll hear me kind of preach it, that I usually talk about fear and the impact fear has had on my life. When I wandered into that group that Monday night, which I remember very vividly, it was after I had moved from Tennessee to California. I'm originally from California. And my story starts when at a young age, when my father decided that in his unfulfilled life, he wanted to join the military and follow his dreams. And my anger and resentment began to multiply at that point because his pursuit of his dreams were the meant the decimation of my own, because I did not want to go to Tennessee. All of my extended family members live here, my friends, my life, et cetera, was here. And I moved to a place that I don't feel like I enjoyed or fit in with very much, but I did find Al-Anon there. I was in Alateen for a few years. And then I started, I don't want to go to Alateen anymore. I want to go into the big leagues. I want to be in Al-Anon. So I was, 17, 18 years old in there with the big folks, wanting to get in there. And, it was a very different dynamic. It helped me set the stage. That program that I got there for a number of years helped me set the stage. I'm very grateful for it. But it wasn't until I moved back to California, and I saw the caliber of program, the caliber of people that are in the rooms here, where I was just blown away. I thought, oh my gosh, this whole time I've been playing in the minor leagues. These folks here, their wisdom, their greatness, I mean, it's just the everything, the love just pouring in. I was like, wow, I could not believe what I was seeing. People like Vicky, Pam, Greg, April, so on, so many people, Dave, oh God, Dave, oh my goodness. I just thought, man, I feel like I've known these people for years, like from the get-go. I truly felt comfortable. I truly felt there is no judgment here. I carried a lot of that judgment in my, I like to say, my old program. I carried that. I felt like I had to be a certain way. I was the only young, I was the only male, and I was the youngest by about 20 years, if not more. And I thought, okay, I'm special. I'm everybody's baby. I've got to be, the prodigy here. I've got to do this. I held myself up to a very high standard. And I realized that I was doing that because as a child, I spent the vast majority of my childhood trying to earn attention and approval from my parents, particularly my father. So I always strived for that perfection to finally earn that approval and that love that I felt that was I was not deserving of. I'm the oldest of three children. My brother is 2 years younger than me. And we could not be more different. We are the absolute polar opposite of each other in every way. And for some reason, we have almost never fought. We have never physically fought each other. We've had minor arguments, but he is the best, my best friend in the world. Unfortunately, the same could not be said for my sister, who was 5 years younger than me, is the only girl, and was the you know, the female embodiment of the second coming, at least in my perception. I thought, wait a minute. Why does she get all the love? Why does she get all the attention? Why is she? And I thought, it must be me. There's something wrong with me. Growing up, everybody, all friends, family, everybody would say, I look so much like my dad. I act like my dad. I am the clone of my dad. The only difference is that, you know, he's Mexican and I'm white. So that's really the only thing. You know, we joke about that, you know, so I look Jewish and he doesn't. But anyway, I thought it must be me. I internalized that. I thought, okay, he's not happy with himself. So when he sees me, he sees a reflection of his own character. And I felt that he was, I don't like to use this word, it was abusive. It felt abusive to me. I shouldn't say to me, it was. And it took a long time to come to terms with that. The reason why I hesitate to say things like that is because I've learned that I actually didn't have it as bad as most people. And for that reason, I've been reluctant to engage in any speaker meetings or sharings on personal fronts like that, because I have often felt that I am unworthy. I don't qualify to be in the program per se, because I'm fortunate and never had direct alcoholics in my immediate family. So I felt that I was coming from a place of, you know, I'm a fraud. You know, I can't say things. I can't share like that. I don't belong here. But something wasn't right in my life. Now I've come to find out that the drinking happened in previous generations and it passed down. And I thought for a long time that explanation wasn't going to be good enough for people in the program. I still wouldn't be welcome because I have no parents who are alcoholics. But we still have the unhealthy behavior, the dysfunction, the you name it, it's there. But I wanted to keep it a secret. And when I came to Al-Anon first, my dad was deployed. He was no longer around. And I saw him very little throughout my late adolescence and in my teenage years. I saw him very little. And so that's when I began to think, okay, this is something new I'm going to try. I am going to do this program. I'm going to work this program. And when he comes back from overseas, I'm going to be the prodigal son that he has always wanted. And he will love me, finally. This was coupled with the fact that my dad is a very talented musician, a percussionist, and I followed in those footsteps as well. So much so to the point that I don't even really recall learning much of the learning process of being a percussionist. I just was. And I remember vowing to myself, when he comes back, I will be a better drummer, a better percussionist than he is. And at that point, that will be the key. Then he will say, I love you and I'm proud of you. And so I worked and I worked and I worked and I practiced, and I would come home after school and I would spend at least an hour or two in a little tool shed that we fixed up, and I would play and play and play, and I would destroy my neighbor's patience and their eardrums. Never got the police called on me for some reason. I don't know how that never happened. Maybe because I wasn't terrible. But I remember the day it happened. He had finally returned from a deployment from overseas in Iraq. And I thought, let me show you what I can do. And I showed him. And you probably won't be surprised to learn that even though he did say, wow, you're better than me, I can't believe that you've improved so much. When those words came, I felt nothing. And it was then that the emptiness began to overtake me. And I thought, I've been living my life all these years for something that cannot be achieved here. And even though I had been in the program for about 5 years, 4 or 5 years at the time, I wasn't getting it. I wasn't actually working the program. I wasn't marking time. I was marking time. It's a musical term that we say. We sit there and we keep the tempo, for those of you who are not familiar. I wasn't actually doing the work. And I felt lost. But I wasn't ready to look in the right places yet. I began in college. I began dating around. And I found someone. And not long after, we became pregnant with my first son. And that was the darkest chapter of my life, because it's supposed to be the happiest. You know, in the movies, and everybody says, this is the happy time. But for someone who is inadequate, who has no sense of self, I thought to myself, oh no, this child will endure what I have and be worse off, and will have a life of pain. And that's what happened. I made a horrible mistake, and I began to hurt the people that I care the most about. I was unfaithful to his mother during that time of pregnancy. And I began to realize that my coping behavior was that I was going to seek attention and approval wherever I could get it, by whatever means necessary. It was always nice to be told that you're intelligent, or that you're handsome, or that you're funny. But it began to lose its polish. And so I craved it in other ways. I began to up the ante. I grew my hair out super long and made myself look unattractive as possible. I hid behind, I'm a male, so I couldn't really wear makeup per se. So I grew a large beard and I put on sunglasses, and I would hide away because I was too ashamed to show my real face. And then in my twisted sickness, I thought, if I can still get gorgeous, beautiful women to admire me, then that is that's my own handicap that I have put on myself that would make me be worthy. See, I that is the medicine I need. I almost ended up in jail one night because I had an inappropriate relationship with somebody in the program who was a little bit younger than me. Now, I've never really told people that. Very few people know that. But I feel safe saying it now, because this is the place of without judgment. And it's also what is also the catalyst for change for my life. By the grace of God, I was not arrested. I was forgiven by that individual and her family, even though it was consensual. It was wrong. And I have had to deal with the repercussions of those decisions to this very day. Because as a result, my son does not live with me now. He lives in Colorado. and I see him very little. And it is a very heartbreaking thing to know that my terrible decisions and my sickness reverberates even today, and that in some way has been a self-fulfilling prophecy. So that when I met my wife, my current wife, and we had my second son in this new relationship, I thought, things will not repeat themselves. This cannot happen again. And I was petrified at the realization that I started going down the same path that I did before. And I thought to myself, here I am, finding myself in eerily similar situations. What is the common denominator in this equation? What is the missing variable in the equation as well? Obviously, it's me. And I'm trying to force things without the assistance of a higher power, because I didn't have one for the longest time, which is somewhat ironic because I've been a churchgoer almost my entire life. I am very religious. I'm very spiritual. But I wasn't in a meaningful way. And it's really hard to explain to somebody who's not in the program how that's even possible. My relationship with the higher power was based on fear. I thought, I have to be a certain way. I'm not good enough. Never will be. Let me just go through the motions. So I was on the verge of divorce when I walked into those rooms here. I moved here. And actually, the Cliff Notes version is when I was in Tennessee, my wife and I was fighting the court battle to keep my oldest son with me. When I lived in Tennessee, we needed a place to live because of all those things that have happened, left me financially inept here. And then I ended up living with my father for a while to get back on my feet. I worked two jobs. And worked myself to the bone almost, and began supplementing income by donating plasma. So I was pretty tired. And I thought, I have to do this. I have to make up and repent for the mistakes that I've made. My wife found a house that she liked, and I thought, you know what? Whatever she wants, she will get, because I've hurt her. I did not hurt her as the way that I had hurt my previous, but I had still done hurtful things. I had inappropriate conversations. I had inappropriate contacts with people. And I realized I was still persistent in the attention and approval, codependency. And while it wasn't nearly as bad, it was still hurtful. And I realized that I used it as an excuse. Well, it's not as bad as it could be. You know, you have no idea. You know, get over it. Still hadn't clicked for me. But when we found this house and we did everything right, we had the money, we had these things, a call came back to me and said, you don't qualify for the financing on your house. And I thought, how the hell is that possible? You're crazy. You're lying. What is it? And they say, you owe back child support. I said, that's weird, because I paid. I had a savings account. And when I was ruled against, they took all the money. I said, I paid all that money 9 months ago. Look, here's the receipts. I paid it. They go, well, it's showing on our system that has not happened. I said, you know, and I'm just so beyond over the moon thinking, what is going on here? Why? I was like, am I still repenting for those sins? What have I done? And then I just asked, I don't know why, I just asked, I said, have you ever heard of something like this happening, it taking 9 months to for the payment to post to the balance, the principal? She says, no, never heard of that ever. And I don't know why I thought the answer to that question would make me feel better, because it didn't. And then I looked to my wife. I looked to the sky and I just said, what do you want from me? What more do I have to do? And I gave up in that point. At that point, I gave up. I look at my wife and I say, what do we do? And she says, let's just go to California. That's where you want to go anyway. And I looked at her and I said, please do not play with me. Do not joke, because I've always wanted to be here with my family. My grandmother had died the month before this whole thing had happened. And I was sad that I could not be here for her funeral. And so my grandfather was left alone in his home, and he's in his 80s. So I said, don't tease me, because there's an option here for that. And I'm not kidding. With 5 minutes later, my grandfather calls and we tell him the bad news. We didn't get our house in Tennessee that we wanted. And he says, well, I do kind of wish you guys would move over here anyway. It's been lonely in this house without your grandma. And I'm on the phone and I look at my wife and I go, he just told us to move over there. That's crazy. Okay, you know, just putting it to the side. I said, okay, you know, thanks for the offer. It's very, you know, it's helpful. You're consoling me. Appreciate that. Bye. Call my dad right after that and say, Dad, we didn't get the house. I've been living in your house for a year and a half with my wife and my new wife and new baby. I love you, but I don't want to do this anymore. And then he says, well, maybe you should just move to California with your grandfather. And at that point, he just said to move to California. And then my wife goes, well, I guess that settles it. We're going. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. And so we headed out. And I thought leaving Tennessee would be my solution. I will finally be happy away from all these dark chapters, from all these things, back in a place that I've always wanted to be in with my family. Would you be surprised if I told you that that's not what happened? That it got kind of nasty. My wife almost filed for divorce, and I thought, no, 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 this cannot happen. And so I came into the rooms and I heard these wonderful things, and I thought to myself, and I don't even know why I came back. I don't know why I came back, because I had been in there for a long time and I had thought, this isn't going to work. What am I doing? But then people were sharing these things and I was actually listening. And there was a man that was sitting in those rooms on Monday, and I thought, I want what that man has. And so I called him and I said, I was hoping maybe you could be my sponsor. And he said, I'm not willing to do that unless you are ready to actually do the work for it. Are you miserable enough to want things to change? And I thought, by God, I don't know how much worse it could possibly be. Yes, please. And so we got to work. Many tears later, many laughs later, many begrudging phone calls and texts later, checking in with this person, I can say my life is the best it's ever been. I am no longer on the verge of divorce. I have a higher power. I have a relationship with that higher power. I no longer concern myself with people, their opinions about me, for the most part. And probably the two most important things are that my anger that I had for so long, which was the facade for my fear, and the need for attention and approval is no longer there. It's an emotional thing to admit even now, because it ruled me for so long. There are moments in my life that I recall so clearly, even though I have a terrible memory for them. The catalysts for change really involve my children realizing the negative consequences of my behavior. I wanted to hug my youngest son when he was about 3. He was standing on the stairs and I looked at him and I raised my hands up to give him a hug. And he flinched from me because he thought I was going to hit him. And in that moment, I broke down. I was just broken from that. I thought, my child fears me. He does not know that I love him. And so I knew at that point it couldn't be any worse. I've already lost one son. I cannot lose another. And so I worked on this program, and it was not easy. The key for me was what I like to call the death of the ego, because that was my own worst enemy. My own ego was the worst. I stopped playing music. I stopped drumming, not because I didn't like it anymore, but because I didn't need it in the way that I used to. Now I can do it because I want to, not because I need it for an end. I find fulfillment in other things. My children know that I love them. And that is the greatest gift that this program has given me. My loved ones know that I care about them. It's Al-Anon has helped me learn what is my business. And I thought that my extended returning to California to be with my extended family would be very enjoyable. But unfortunately, when I returned, my grandfather was living in a house that was not safe for him. So I moved with him. My family didn't like that. And so they made up stories about how I'm going to take advantage of him and take his house and take his money and kick him out. And then even that wasn't my business. Family for me has always been important. And even the program has given me the humility, the grace to know that even family is not my business. I know that I'm doing the right things. And I get to choose who gets to see the part of me that I've worked to achieve. I no longer take things personally, as harshly as I did. And the ironic thing is, I forgot to mention that the ironic thing was that both my partners, both mothers of my children, are either former addicts and or adult children of alcoholics. So while I felt like I was not qualified to be in the program, I am now. My in-laws are still users, and my wife is in recovery. And even I've learned to communicate with this program. I know that the people that act, they don't act in this way, in these codependencies, because it's something that I've done. It's them. It is their solution to a problem that they have. Whereas I chose to want to get attention and approval from other people, these people choose substances. I am now gentle with myself. I'm now able to communicate effectively without judgment. I'm able to be honest. And I would venture to say probably the greatest thing is that I have a sense of self. I didn't have that when I started. I remember one of my first Alateen meetings, they say, tell us about yourself. And I had nothing, and I remember feeling so embarrassed. And the only answer I had was, I like the color green. That's it. And I felt very stupid. I thought, why don't I know these things? And so that was why the Young Adults Learn to Live program was so interesting to me, because I'm fortunate to have found the program at such a young age. And if I can do something to help other people, then I'm going to do it. I put myself out there, but I'm not, you know, pestering. You know, I'm not like, hey, how you doing? Other people's recovery is their business. And I make it a point to know that if you want to reach out to me, I will be there to help you. And I'll do my best. I wasn't ready. It took me almost 15 years to be ready. Some people, you know, I hear some shares, oh, it took me a long time. I was ready for three years, 4 or 5 years. I said, well, I wish. 15 years. I should not say wasted. 15 years I used getting ready. And now that I am ready, now that I have achieved what I have wanted to achieve, it isn't all perfect. It isn't rainbows and flowers. I still mess up from time to time. I messed up this afternoon. I was angry. I couldn't fix my wife's problems for her. But then I realized, hey, I'm hungry. I haven't eaten today. I'm going to go get some tea. And as soon as I ate, I gave it back to God. And I said, please help her. So I think that the biggest slogans for me has always been progress, not perfection. And I no longer seek perfection. It's hard not to, but that perfection isn't my ultimate goal anymore like it was. Whatever that might look like, I don't know what perfection looks like, but I don't seek it anymore. I am now, because of the program, I am a human being, not a human doing. And it is a wonderful thing. And I think my time is up, so... Thank you, everybody, for letting me share.